Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette. I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com, and sitting across from me, as he always does when we record this podcast, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
I'll probably be some kind of scientist building inventions in my space lab in space.
Yeah, so, but will you be blinded with science?
Maybe. This entire episode comes as a part of an experiment. I went on to Google Plus and I posted there saying that we were going to record an episode and that we were hoping to get some suggestions. And we got lots and lots and lots of suggestions, many of which we hope to tackle in future episodes. But today, this Google Plus first, so I guess we're going to have to come up with a new sound effect. Here's our Google Plus suggestion. This comes from Keegan, who says, "What about a look at how we will interact with the internet 5 years from now?" So Chris and I are putting on our prestidigitator prognostication hats, and we're going to stare into the future until our eyes get all blurry, and we're going to tell you what we see.
Mm-hmm.
So internet, 5 years, how are we going to interact with it? Go.
That's a good question. Now, it would be easy for me to say that that tablets are going to be there,
yeah,
simply because they're so hot right now. I definitely think mobile,
yes,
is primarily the way people are going now. Mm-hmm. Don't get the impression that I've given up on computers, specifically desktop computers, because I still enjoy not having to haul around a lot of technology with me and having just a small device.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy having the real estate of a nice giant screen. Now, but I think mobile is the way. I think people want to be able to get stuff anywhere and everywhere. So people are going to be designing content, to fit multiple needs.
Yeah, we're already seeing a lot of that today, where you see a lot of websites that have a mobile version and a full version. And then we're seeing more and more smartphones that just bypass the mobile version, go straight to the full version because they are capable of displaying an entire web page upon their, you know, their screens. And of course, tablets, same sort of thing. I agree. I think that the internet in 5 years will be much more pervasive in mm-hmm. the sense that, mostly from the stuff that we tend to carry with us, but, that we'll be able to go from place to place and be able to tap into the internet pretty much anywhere we go. I mean, that's almost the case now as it is, but it should be even more so in the future that we'll get to a point where it'll be really unusual when you're in a space where you cannot access the internet, at least any place when you're on land. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe when you're like out at sea or something, that might still be kind of unusual unless you happen to have some sort of satellite modem. But otherwise, I think, you'll pretty much have the internet at your fingertips from a variety of devices. I mean, we're talking about 5 years from now. So if you think about it, the iPhone came out in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So as of the recording of this podcast, that was 4 years ago. And already I think you could argue that the iPhone has had a huge impact on at least the way we consume the internet
mm-hmm.
and also how developers create applications for the internet. A lot of the things that are on the iPhone and on Android and on other smartphone operating systems as well, they aren't necessarily a web browser, but they do tie into the internet in some way,
mm-hmm.
right? Like for example, with Google, I have Google Navigator.
Yeah.
And that uses Google Maps and it uses a GPS in order to help me navigate through to a destination.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that we wouldn't have really thought about, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
Then we started getting GPS units to really hit the market, and now smartphones are kind of displacing those. So 5 years from now, I imagine that smartphones will be pretty much the most common kind of mobile device that people will be carrying around with them, capable mm-hmm. of that. We may finally start seeing some things like some smartwatches that are actually worth purchasing. I mean, there's been smartwatches in the past that have been kind of interesting, but just haven't quite worked. And I think part of that is, you know, there are a lot of issues you got to work around, like how do you miniaturize the components to that size mm-hmm. where it's still a compelling product, right?
Right. And I think that's one of those things too, where years ago people were talking about how everything was going miniaturized, and now that we have smartphones, we won't need laptops. And I know I'm not the only person who likes a nice big screen when you're actually doing work.
Not to mention a nice big keyboard.
Yes. And the truth of the matter is, I think that, there's a certain practical point. It's not that we can't make a smartwatch that would do those kinds of things. I think the practical reality is that at a certain point, it's kind of difficult to use, especially with fat fingers like mine, something that has a touch screen that's that small.
Yeah, and voice input still isn't quite there yet.
Yeah.
It's close. Google's done a really good job with voice input. I mean, I'm very impressed with what they've done so far, and I'm sure that 5 years from now, it'll probably be really phenomenal, where navigating by voice will be quite easy. It's hard for us to make that leap right now because it seems so foreign to think about talking to a computer, especially if you're talking about any sort of, you're in a public place or you're, say, in an office at work or whatever.
Or you have an accent that may be unreadable to a device.
Or you want to look up something that is really, personal.
Yeah.
Like some sort of medical issue, you know, that sort of stuff you don't want to be talking out loud to your machine. So clearly the physical input is never going to completely go away unless we finally get to a point where we can just telepathically interact with our devices, which is not going to happen in 5 years. There's one of my solid predictions there. We are not going to have a point where we have mind controlled devices in 5 years. So it's more pervasive. We've got more access. I actually see some more overlapping technologies coming in, possibly some new technologies. But really, there's the stuff that I'm imagining is we're totally capable of doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is having context-specific internet attractions or situations or circumstances. What I mean by that is that you could create an application, let's say, that reacts to signals sent on a specific wavelength.
Okay.
And then you create transmitters that transmit things on that wavelength so that when you come into the proximity of that transmitter, then your device begins to interact with it in whatever way you had designed.
Right.
And here's an easy example of this, because these things exist already. An example of this is Pal Mickey. Have you heard about Pal Mickey at Disney World?
I've heard about it, but I don't know a lot about it.
Okay, so Pal Mickey is this idea that Disney came up with a couple of years ago where they have the Mickey Mouse doll, and inside there is a receiver. And the receiver picks up radio signals as you get close enough, you know, when you get within range. The receiver picks up the signal and makes Pal Mickey tell you something. And let's say that you're at one of the Disney parks and you're walking around. Well, they make the transmitters. They only give them enough power to transmit within a certain range. So that way you're not getting all these transmissions. All, you know, Mickey doesn't go into seizures as soon as you walk through the Magic Kingdom gates.
Right.
But when you get close enough, Mickey will make a little noise. You press, I think, one of his hands, and then he says, the information. Like, he might tell you how long the wait is for the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, or he might give you a little bit of trivia information about one of the buildings you're passing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all based upon just radio waves. There's no real internet involved here.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reason why you couldn't have that connected with the internet, where you have these transmitters that are not necessarily meant to transmit signals across an entire city, but maybe just like a general area around the building that they are attached to, and that it could give you updated information about stuff. Let's say a store sale goes on and you've got this app that alerts you when a sale starts, and you could even have specific sales happening within a 2-hour range, and it's just if you happen to be in the area that you find out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a way of kind of adding more of that sort of engagement thing we talked about in previous episodes. Like, I see that as being a possibility where we have not just a pervasive internet, but a contextual internet as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's timely. A lot of the stuff we see on the internet is designed to be what we call evergreen.
Yeah.
We call it that here at How Stuff Works all the time. An evergreen piece of content is something that should be relevant today, and it should be relevant 5 years from now. It should be relevant 10 years from now. You should always be able to go back to that piece of content, and it means exactly what it needs to mean. And then there's other content that we create that is very timely, that, you know, after a few months, it may not have the impact that it once had, or it might need to be updated on a near constant basis.
Like most of the stuff that
is in the tech channels.
In the tech
channels. Yes. Yeah, because here's the funny thing about technology. It keeps on changing.
Yep. Now, I think location-based services, too.
Yeah.
You know, there are millions of people with smartphones, but it's really only scratching the surface of the population in general. I think now that they're starting to become more affordable, there's real competition in the smartphone market for consumers. And the cost of providing data goes down. You know, I think it'll be more compelling for people to sign on to location-based services and, you know, get offers as they're walking by and subscribe to that, too.
Right.
I don't know so much about augmented reality. I think it'll become more popular, but
yeah.
I still don't think it's going to become dominant simply because it requires you to look around with your phone and you could trip and fall.
Yeah, I mean, if we ever do get to a point where you can have those glasses that do the transparent display, where you can see the display of information on your glasses,
like a heads up display.
Yeah, essentially a heads up display for
just little eyeballs.
Just looking around and seeing what that their restaurant's rated as. you know, we've been promised that for a while. It's almost starting to enter the realm of jetpacks and flying cars.
Yeah.
I know that there are jetpacks and flying cars, but they're not predominant, right? They're not everywhere.
So right.
That's what I'm talking about. Also, I just think that, again, you know, unless it's something that can be built into your existing eyewear, I just don't see it being that compelling, just because it means more people are like, well, great, now there's another thing I got to buy and wear, you know?
I wish I could have a show of hands, but I can't, and you don't need to email, but I was just thinking, how many people heard you say eyewear and thought I, capital W-E-A-R,
lowercase I,
instead of
E-Y-E? Well, you know, if Apple does come out with
glasses.
With glasses, they will call it eyewear.
Probably.
And they should pay me. It's trademarked. Jonathan Strickland. not really trademarked. So I think we might actually see other internet capable devices really starting to play a part. I mean, we've at CES of 2011, there were a lot of appliances that were internet capable.
The Internet of Things.
Yeah. So this would be the case of having other things on the internet besides computers, mobile devices, and that kind of thing. It would be more like things like refrigerators and, washers and dryers. And, a lot of this is, you know, goes into home automation. Some of it is just, information, management. Like, let's say you want to manage the list of things that are in your refrigerator so that when you go shopping, you know, what you need to pick up. That sort of stuff. I think within 5 years, we'll probably see a lot more of that. I don't know that it'll again be the dominant kind of appliance on the market. I think that'll still be sort of I think it'll still be somewhat of a niche market. Maybe a larger niche than it is right now.
Yeah.
But I don't think you would walk into an appliance store and 90% of the stuff you see would be internet capable.
Well, here's a thought on that. They've been predicting this for years.
Right.
We were all going to have radio frequency identification tags, RFID tags, inside all of our products. So you can have all your stuff in the fridge, and the fridge is able to identify what's in there.
And when you bought it.
And when you bought it, and there would be a screen up on the front of the fridge that says, hey, you know what? You could make this for dinner because you have all the ingredients you need to make this, or you could make that, and it will give you recipes and things, which is a really neat idea.
Yeah.
But they've been, again, predicting this for years.
Yeah, and it might
and
also
it just,
say...
It hasn't happened yet.
Might also say the peaches are restless. You need to throw them out.
The peaches are restless. One of them growled at me. Yeah, that's...
When potato salad goes bad.
Yeah, the technology to do this hasn't been out of the realm of possibility for several years.
Yeah,
this is doable, but we're not doing it.
It's an adoption thing. I mean, you know, in some cases you've got companies that are trying to create products for which there is no demand, and then they're trying to generate the demand for that product. And sometimes that works. Like, you know, you could argue that Steve Jobs does that all the time.
Well, he you know, the iPad is a clear example of this, and I still when it first came out, I saw a lot of criticism that it was a product that no one needed,
right.
And which is still technically true. Nobody needs a tablet. Well, okay, few people need a tablet. Let's say that. There are some roles that really could use a small computing device like that. So,
right.
But for a lot of people, it's something they want.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that it's been a year later, as of the time we've recorded this, almost a year and a half after the iPad's release, there are lots of different kinds of tablets on the market. The tablet market is taking off, sort of like the netbook market did a few years ago. And I saw criticism probably about 2 or 3 months before we recorded this, where it was saying, well, you know, I still don't think there's any reason why anyone needs a tablet. Most of the people I see who say they have really integrated a tablet into their lifestyle, bought one, and then found a use for it. But I would argue that that's the way it was with personal computers back in the day. And I don't think tablets are going away simply because I think people who buy them, you know, now that there is a market for it, people are going to start creating more useful software for it. And I think people will start using their tablets to do more creative work than they used to be able to do simply because there wasn't software for it on the initial release of these devices. And there will be now that that's coming out. There already is quite a bit of creative software. And I think they're just going to be more, it's just going to be another tier of products in between smartphones and computers.
I think that there's also the potential that we could see even more products introduced into that space that don't fit the tablet model or the smartphone model.
Sure.
I mean, it's hard to say because it's 5 years from now. There's a lot of smart people working on these things, and who knows who could come up with the next big thing. I mean, I mentioned smartwatches, which could fit into that category.
Yeah.
But for example, here's just something just out of the blue. Let's say that someone decides to create a device that is similar to a smartphone, but is essentially kind of the step between smartphone and a MP3 player. So not an iPod Touch, which you could argue is kind of in that realm too, but it's more focused just on the music. So in other words, you create a device that is specifically designed to help you tap into the streaming music services that are out there. So, you know, there's smartphones that can do this as well. So you could argue, well, maybe there's not a market for this. But then you could say, well, you might want to have one of these devices that doesn't run quite as many applications, is not as processor intensive, doesn't run down the battery as quickly, mm-hmm. doesn't tax your smartphone's battery at all, that would let you tap into these massive cloud storage services, things like Google Music or Amazon or iTunes, the iCloud, or Spotify, any of these sort of services where you could stream or otherwise consume the music on this device without it affecting your other devices. Mm-hmm. Because that's, I mean, I have a smartphone that's capable of doing these sort of things, but I rarely use those capabilities because it runs down the battery.
Right.
And I don't want, you know, I want to have my phone available in case I want to, for some reason, make a phone call. So I could see that sort of thing becoming a thing where the next MP3 player isn't necessarily focused on how many songs it can store, but rather it's access to various streaming services or cloud storage services. That's a possibility. So we've talked about mobility. We've talked about a lot more appliances that would be connected to the internet. I mean, you're starting to see that already with cars as well, where you have cars that don't necessarily connect directly to the internet, but when you park them in your garage, they can sync up via Bluetooth or some other method to your home network, and you can transfer data back and forth across, usually music, but you can do other things as well.
Well, you can also have equipment put in your car to make a hotspot too.
Yeah, so we're probably going to see a lot more of that as well. Again, the ubiquitous access. So that's kind of like the shiny, happy version of what the internet could be like in 5 years and how we would access the internet. I don't see it as necessarily being a total revolution from the way we're doing it now, but probably a much more pervasive way of what we do now. Let's talk about some possible dark side elements to what the internet could be like in 5 years.
Okay.
So dark side number one, and this is a big one, is that we could see internet service providers, ISPs, start to limit the kinds of services and content you have access to. In other words, let's say that this is essentially the scenario where net neutrality is no longer even a concept. It's gone. In this mm-hmm. case, you have ISPs that are able to strike up partnerships, let's say, with various content providers and service providers.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, now, not that I would ever expect this to happen, but in theory, you could have a particular internet service provider partner with, say, Facebook.
Okay.
And then anyone who is a customer of that ISP has access to Facebook. Anyone who is not a customer with that ISP doesn't.
Right.
I mean, that's an extreme example that I don't think could ever happen because Facebook, of course, is so huge. It's got, you know, way more subscribers than you would ever see be tied to a specific provider. But I could easily see that for emerging services and content.
Mm-hmm.
So, or let's say that the internet service providers that are also cable companies.
Mm-hmm.
Limit it so that you can only access their content that they create through their ISP.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are on ISP B and you want to see the content that ISP A creates through its cable company, part of its corporation, you're out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
At least you can't see it online. We're starting to see some of that emerge right now. Now, whether or not that continues is another question, but it could very well be that within 5 years, your experience on the internet is completely dictated by the internet service provider you belong to,
mm-hmm.
or cell phone carrier in that case, because it may be that you have one kind of internet when you get home because you're a customer of one ISP, and you have a different kind of internet when you access it on your phone because you've got a contract with a specific cell phone carrier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that would be crazy, really, because you could think like, oh, I'll, this video is great, but I'll watch it when I get home. And then you realize, oh, I can't access it at home because my ISP doesn't have a deal with that particular content provider.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that you'll see throttling. Like if you want to use a particular streaming radio service and you are on a cable company that doesn't have a deal with that, provider, and perhaps they have a deal with the DSL provider in your area. Well, that means that they're going to give per the agreement, they're going to give priority to their own customers, and then you may experience hiccuping or delays or problems with the service.
You might see that sign saying Netflix is adjusting your buffering rate because your internet connection is slower.
Yes. And that's another issue too, I think, that is possible to see. Talking about depending on your ISP or your provider, for cell phone services, so many of them now, for both, are instituting data caps.
Yeah.
So I think it is very possible that in the future, it's funny because the services are all working toward unlimited models. Like, if you subscribe to Netflix streaming,
You have unlimited. You can watch as many movies as you can pack in during each month.
Yep. And that goes for a lot of the other services too. You can stream unlimited music from a lot of places.
Yep.
And there's, of course, plenty of other ways to use lots of bandwidth. They're opening those services up to an unlimited all you can eat model for, a set price. Mm-hmm. And people who really use them, say families, who have multiple people watching multiple shows in multiple rooms, that's a great way to use a ton of bandwidth.
Yeah.
Of course there are arguments that say it's really just the people who are downloading lots of stuff illegally.
But there are so many legitimate ways to use a lot of bandwidth now.
Yeah.
I mean, before there were these venues where you could get to this content in a legal way, maybe you could make the argument that the people who were eating up all the bandwidth were pirates. But I don't think that's the case today.
Well, a lot of them say right now, the people who are using the bandwidth that gets them into trouble are a small minority of people. Like only, I'm making up a number because I haven't seen it in a while, but the last time I looked, they were saying something like 3 to 5% of their customers. They're saying, oh, no, these bandwidth caps don't affect the majority of our customers. But the thing is, the services themselves are encouraging us to use as much data as we can take. And the providers are all starting to cap their services. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. And in some cases, they're not making it clear to subscribers exactly how much data they're using and how much is going to put them in trouble.
Right.
So I think it within the next 5 years, you're going to start to see that clash, especially because broadband penetration is still somewhat limited in the United States. Speeds are somewhat slower here than in other places. And, I think as these things ratchet up and people are encouraging us to use more data, this is going to come into conflict, and the providers are going to hear from their customers how unhappy they are with the service because, hey, you say I can use, all this data and it's supposed to be such a fast network. And when I actually try to use it, I can't.
Yeah. It'd also be interesting to see if ISPs, if they do create this sort of compartmentalized, internet, in which case we can't even call it the internet anymore. Because the internet is supposed to be the global network of networks.
Yes.
And if we're talking about ISPs each creating their own, then they all just become networks.
Yeah.
Now, it might become internet with a lowercase I as opposed to internet with the uppercase I.
So instead of being a joke, we will really be talking about the internets.
Yeah. It really will be the internets. Which one do you have? There's also the possibility that some of these ISPs, and a lot of these companies have tried this already, will try to make their own services that mimic or replace the services from other providers out there, not just ISPs, but other companies as well. So let's say that, ISP A decides to come up with its own version of Twitter and then doesn't allow you to access Twitter on its services, and instead encourages you to use this other one. That's another way that this stuff could get further fragmented. I don't think it would ever happen, but it's possible. Another thing we might see are we've seen already. I'm curious to find out if within 5 years, if it's proven to be a successful campaign or not, are paywalls.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a paywall is where you can't have access to a particular site's content until after you pay a subscription fee.
Right. So if you want to read, as an example, a current example, the New York Times, there's a certain number of articles that you can read for free.
Per month.
Per month. And then after that, you are asked to go ahead and subscribe. The Wall Street Journal.
Same.
On the other hand, yeah. I mean, there's certain content that you can get depending on how you're doing it. But for the most part, you have to pay if you're going to do that. Now, I think it'll be more common, paywall or no. Or whether they succeed in general, I would say, I think you're going to see a lot of maybe hybrid subscriptions. Like, for example, Wired Magazine right now. Mm-hmm. If you are a print subscriber, I've been a print subscriber for many years, you can also, and this is a fairly recent development as of the time we're recording this, you can also, if you have an iPad, as I do, you can download the issues you have been subscribing to. So now I get all the digital issues free because I am a print subscriber.
Yeah. Technically, and I think you're not getting them free. They're just included in your subscription.
Right. Well, I'm getting them at no extra cost because at one point, Wired, the online app, required you to pay regardless of whether or not you were a print subscriber.
Gotcha.
So I'm getting it as a benefit of my subscription. I get both versions of that. And I think that's probably going to become more common because I think the tablet was at one point considered the saving grace for magazines and newspapers.
Yeah.
And I think people do enjoy reading some of that content in that format. However, people who are – I've seen it pretty much with regard to just about every magazine that has a subscription available. Hey, why are you charging me for this digital version? I'm already a subscriber to the print version. Can't I have both? You know, I think there are a lot of people who would be willing to say, yeah, okay, I'll give you an extra $2 or $5. You know, give me both because I like both.
I think what'll be interesting to see too is within the next 5 years, if there's a related model that I think it'll be interesting to see if it survives or not, which is the model that companies like HBO use, where, you know, you can get HBO content online, but only if you are a customer of a cable company and you have HBO as part of your service.
Yeah, CNN does that too now.
Yeah, see, does it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think.
Now, interesting.
Now I'm going to have to look that up.
It just surprised me because, I mean, it's been a while since I've been to that site, but really?
The last time I went to CNN.com, they had updated their video. And this is, again, very recent. I think within the last 2 or 3 weeks before we recorded this. Mm-hmm. If you want to access the video, you sign in as a, you know, to your provider, and they will say, okay, now you have access to
like
the video online because you're already a subscriber.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see if that works or if HBO decides to open it up a little bit where, I would imagine it will always be a subscription service. It's never going to be free necessarily, but that you will not you won't have to be a cable company, customer in order to get access to that content. I know there are a lot of people who have cut the cord who would love to have access to things like HBO original programming. I mean, they're all screaming for Game of Thrones, but they can't watch it because they don't have a subscription. You know, they don't have a cable company. They don't have a cable TV subscription. They don't have HBO. So therefore they cannot access that material, even if they wanted, you know, had some online method. It's unavailable to them because they have to be a pre-existing customer before they could also get it online. It'll be interesting to see if that lives for 5 years or if that model goes away. I can imagine a lot of cable companies trying very, very hard to keep that model going because it's an incentive for customers to remain with cable companies. If that were gone, you could subscribe to, say, Game of Thrones and, you know, you pay a certain subscription fee and, that was it. I think that you'd see even more people cutting the cord, which would upset cable companies quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I verified that, as of mid-July 2011, like if you want to use CNN video on your iOS device, that you have to basically prove that you're a subscriber to certain pay TV providers, and that's there are a certain list of them, but they're some of the biggies. I think that model would be more palatable to people to say, you know, hey, yeah, I'm already paying you something. you know, so that's a little bit more tolerable that it's behind a wall, but
yeah,
it's still an issue for a lot of people. And there's still a lot of people who don't have, you know, access to the service at home or can't get it and, you know, still have to come in somehow. So
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I think, I'm hoping that the shiny, happy version of the internet will be the one that we have. It'll probably be somewhere in between, like this crazy pervasive internet where everything's at our fingertips, and this walled off internet where everything is behind a gate and we have to pay to get in. I'm sure it'll be some combination of the two. It's not going to be one or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the internet is an evolving thing. You know, it's earliest incarnations were something the public were completely unaware of.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people still get the idea that it's...
Some of my relatives are still completely unaware of it.
But yeah, I mean, I think
a lot
of people...
What's this Yahoo thing I keep hearing about?
Are still unaware that there was life before Yahoo, you know, for the internet. Okay, yeah, that's trademarked.
Yeah, whatever.
So anyhow.
It's free advertising.
Yeah. Until they sue us.
For free advertising?
Yep.
Come on. All right, fine. Google. All right, there we go. Now we're clear.
I totally feel better now.
Okay, good. All right, so we're going to wrap up this conversation. Guys, let us know what you think the internet's going to be like in 5 years. Like, how are we going to interact with the internet? Are you thinking that we're thinking too small? Should we be talking about cybernetic implants and bionic eyes? And
probably not in 5 years.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we just are too conservative. That's why I'm asking. You guys can let us know. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuff, HSW, or you can send us an email. That address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again in the future.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.